It's Colorado Matters from CPR News. I'm Ryan Warner. A conversation now about happiness at work. Happier people are presumably more productive. They're less likely to quit, and turnover is expensive. There are signs as well that younger workers demand something different from their employers, more meaning. This is the subject of Disruptors Today, our series about Colorado businesses that are rethinking the world. The Crankset Group, near Denver, is trying to rehumanize the workforce. A few years ago, founder Chuck Blakeman told an audience at TEDx Mile High that our culture needs to move from the industrial age to the participation age.
Millennials aren't growing up in the shadow of the industrial age, and so they won't put up with just having a job stripped of its humanity. They actually want work, because work is meaningful. A job only pays the bills.
And Chuck Blakeman is with us. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Ryan. It's great to be with you.
So you indeed say we are moving into the participation age, and companies that don't realize it will fall behind. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, there's two hallmarks of the participation age, Ryan, participation and sharing. Companies that people want to participate in building a great company, not for you, but with you. And they want to share in the results of building that great company, both in the capital of it as well as in the meaning side of it. And that's where we fall short. We want people to participate, but we don't want to share.
How is that different from what has come before, though?
Well, for 150 years at work, we were in what I would call the factory system model, and most companies are still using that, and it is just a participation model. You participate, and the more I can get you engaged, this false sense of engagement, I want you to be incredibly engaged because I can run off with more money. Mm-hmm. Well, I may not be able to express my concern about that, but I understand it. It doesn't make sense to me. Why should I be more engaged so you can run off with more money and more happiness? You just make work harder for me so that you can be better off. We need to change that. The participation age is upon us.
Give us examples of changes companies have made to be a part of the participation age so I understand this practically. Like, what are changes in a business model or in an office that reflect what you're saying?
Yeah. Well, the number one thing that makes us human is creativity and just awareness. But the biggest thing that makes us adult is the ability to make decisions. The fancy term is agent of responsibility. Most people at work have not been able to make decisions. It's always been on the manager to tell you what to do. And so the biggest change that great companies are making, hundreds of large ones and thousands of smaller ones, is that they're employing what we would call distributed decision making, where decisions are now being made where they have to be carried out. That takes me from being a childlike employee into being an adult stakeholder where I actually can make meaning.
And you have some, what I suppose some might call, far out ideas about the workplace. No leaders, no HR directors, unlimited time off.
I know.
This is about empowering the individual because you think that empowers the company. But isn't that just a free-for-all?
Yeah, it sure could be. If the cat's away, the mouse will play. Chaos and anarchy, that's the response. We get to this all the time. But that's from people who have come from the factory system model, which again runs most companies. It came from slavery through serfdom, through the military, into the factories, and now we have dental clinics running factory system models.
Wait, I just want to say, you trace the current workplace to slavery?
Oh yeah, Hammurabi's Code is the first place that the manager is mentioned, and it's in relationship to slavery. It makes perfect sense. If people don't want to be there, you need to manage them to get them to work. So you need a gun or a whip or the ability to hire and fire and threaten them. You need that in one person. You need that power source in order to get them to work. But if people actually want to be there, if the assumption is that they are smart and motivated, then that no longer needs to be the case.
In the TEDx talk you gave, you got the biggest applause when you said meetings should be optional.
Yeah.
But lots of benefits just on this show of our team, for instance, lots of benefits come from when we get into a room together and we spitball and we brainstorm in blue sky.
No question. But what if you got into that room and there were eight people supposedly in the room and only three showed up? Well, what that tells you is that your meeting isn't doing the spitballing and the kind of things that those other five people think is meaningful. The problem here is that management as a model does not allow people to follow. There is no leadership in management. It's just by threat. I don't know if you're following me or if you're behind me because I have a gun. I can fire you. Huh. But in leadership, if in a pure, in a true organic leadership model, if I call a meeting and seven people show up, I'm a leader. If I look behind me and nobody's there, I'm just out for a walk.
Do you have proof that this improves the bottom line and improves productivity and retention?
Well, that's the fun part. I've had a two-year Twitter war with, I won't mention his name, but a very famous consultant who came on saying, if there's ever an airplane built by self-management, please label it. I'm not getting on it. And my response was, well, the eight GE aviation factories that make engines, they make about a third of the engines for the entire world.
Airplane engines.
Yeah, they're all self-managed. There's not a manager in the whole place. You're going to have to take the bus from now on. Every measure of productivity, revenue growth, increase in profitability, staff retention, every single one of them is on the side of getting rid of managers.
And you believe this appeals to what younger workers are demanding?
Yeah. Well, it's the interesting thing is, Ryan, it appeals to the older ones. The difference between the baby boomers like me and the millennials is just simply that I grew up in the shadow of the industrial age, and my mom taught me shut up, sit down, don't make waves, live invisibly, and go out quietly. The millennials did not get that message, so they're actually going to work to make meaning, not just make money. So they have a different view of it, but we all want this. We're all motivated the same way.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and as part of our series Disruptors about entrepreneurialism in Colorado and businesses that are breaking the mold, we're talking about new approaches to the workplace and how that might transform work. I'd like to bring in Josh Allen Dykstra, who is CEO of Helios. The company says its goal is to create a world where everyone can love work. Josh, thanks for being with us.
Nice to be here.
And you focused on this topic in a TED Talk in Youngstown, Ohio, reflecting on the time in your life when you were a barista at a coffee shop. You say you were terrible at it.
I can make drinks, but I'm terrible because I couldn't freaking care less about being a barista. And as much as I tried to hide that back when I wore the apron, sad to say, it made me kind of an angry barista.
And eventually you stopped being a barista.
Since I hung up my apron many years ago, I've been studying the way we work in general. And the reality is, most of us are baristas who don't want to be. Turns out, there's a highly scientific term for the way we feel about work. Meh.
Meh. In a nutshell, what is your theory, and Helios's theory, about how to stop feeling meh about work?
Yeah. Yeah, so we like to take it pretty far to the extreme and say people should love work. And this is, at first, it seems crazy. It's like, what? It's almost like work is a bad four-letter word, right, for most of us. We think work is supposed to hurt us a little bit. Otherwise, it's not work.
Or I think for a lot of people, there's some love in work, but it's just not consistent.
I think, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so the question is, how do we make that more consistent? Right. And when you look at love, right, love is a complex idea, or how many millions of songs have been written about love. But when you deconstruct how we get to love as an outcome, it becomes much simpler. And so we look at things like what actually gives you energy at work. And so this becomes part of the Helios model, right? Helios is the Greek word for sun, right? That big ball of energy.
And in fact, your title, CEO, is Chief Energy Officer.
Right.
We're not talking about electricity literally here, but what does that mean?
Yeah, human energy, right? It's the thing that actually powers the world, right? Nothing happens in the world without a human having the energy to go do that thing. And so the more we can actually optimize our organizations, and I believe all leaders should be energy optimizer, right? They should be looking at trying to align what actually motivates you to do your best work. The more I naturally align what helps you do your best work with the work you're supposed to be doing.
With the mission of the company.
With the mission of the company and, yeah, with kind of your job role, the more effective you are, the more self-managing you can be, the more autonomous, and just the more you get done.
I understand this in principle. I don't know how it looks daily in the workplace. Can you give me an example of a change that managers make or that companies make to effectuate this?
Yeah. And so really, a lot of it builds on what Chuck was speaking about, right? So it's this idea that the more we let people lead, right, the more we let people work in the area of their strengths, what gives them energy, what makes them feel motivated, the more they get done. And so in practical terms, right, all we're really trying to do is say your job should be based around things that give you energy instead of suck it out.
Okay.
Right? There are certain tasks that light you up. When you do those tasks, you're more focused. You're more attentive. It's closely related to this idea of flow, or what we colloquially call being in the zone. Right? So when you're in, most people know that feeling, right? It's when time kind of it flies by, but it also kind of stands still at the same time. And so when I'm in my zone, right, I look up from a project and realize 3 hours have passed and I haven't eaten lunch. I was really engrossed in my task. I was so focused and attentive and really plugged in to what I was doing. When I'm in that zone, I am so much more productive. So there's a really interesting study from McKinsey done a few years ago, and they talked to senior executives. They said, how much more productive do you feel you are when you're in your zone? And the most common answer across these executives was 5 times. I think I get 5 times more done when I'm in flow, in my zone.
This is all lovely. I just don't understand how it is integrated daily into the workplace. Help a manager understand that. Help a worker understand that. And I'm curious if you think this is applicable beyond white-collar workers. Can this be true for a housekeeper? Can this be true for a parking attendant, a factory worker?
Yeah, so the kind of the misunderstanding that happens in a question like that is there's an assumption that everybody likes the same kind of work, right? And then what happens though is there's infinite a variety of work that people enjoy. And when we give people agency, when we give people the power to actually have more directive control over what kinds of work they're doing and how they approach their work, you find that there are people out there who really like to work with their hands. And they want to do that kind of work. And there are people who really don't want to be stuck behind a computer doing spreadsheets. And there's people who want to do all sorts of different things. And so with this philosophy, what we're doing is really appreciating kind of the variability of people.
It does strike me that this means companies need to know their people better,
right?
You need to really have a sense of who your employee is, what motivates them.
Yeah.
You've developed a tool for folks to use at work, an app. It's meant to improve how they function in a work environment. Give me an example of how I'd use it.
Yeah. So the goal with the app is to start to help people actually kind of start to think differently about work, right? So we think about this in terms of practice, right? Let's say you want to learn how to play an instrument or play a sport, right? There's a defined kind of practice set. If I want to go learn how to play the piano, I have to learn how to I need to practice scales and I need to do chords and, you know, et cetera.
Yeah. Muscle memory.
Right. Absolutely. But when it comes to thinking about work differently, we've got, again, to Chuck's point, we were building on a couple centuries of really destructive work patterns, right? Of the way we think about work is really pretty damaging.
So the employee mindset here is important too. It's not just the corporate
mindset.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it's this idea that all of us need kind of a mindset upgrade, so to speak, when it comes to our work. And our idea with the app is, can we actually use technology to help us upgrade our mindset?
Oh, give me an example. I want to upgrade my software.
Right, right. Absolutely. And so what we do this in a very similar way to like learning the piano, right? So you have a defined kind of practice set, right? There's things we need to practice.
Like?
And one of those is even just learning what energizes me.
Okay.
Right? So I need to know. So we can all feel this, right? It's a visceral thing. You can feel when you're doing something you really enjoy. But most of us, again, due to this factory mindset, we've been kind of trained to ignore it, right? We've been just stuff it down. It's not what work's about, right? Don't pay attention to that feeling.
And actually,
just
if it feels good and I'm having fun, maybe I'm misbehaving.
Totally. Absolutely. That's what I'm saying, right? So really kind of correcting our mindset to say work should be something you love. Work should be something you enjoy because you get more done when you're in that zone.
Okay, so helping identify what those things are is the first step, and then practicing them as if I were practicing the piano.
Absolutely.
Chuck, just briefly, in the last few seconds, what do you make of what you've heard?
I love it. Yeah, we would say, let's define the process, put it on the wall in the form of sticky notes, and have people take the sticky notes that really meet with their strengths and what energizes them. Everything gets done, but now we have people actually living in their highest and best.
Gentlemen, thanks. I'm inspired by it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chuck Blakeman, founder of Crankset Group, just south of Denver. Josh Allen Dykstra, CEO, chief energy officer at Denver-based Helios. Both companies want to make the workplace a happier and more productive place for people. The story is part of our segment, Disruptors, where we explore business trends and entrepreneurialism in Colorado.